Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Graham Hill, former program director and breakfast host of BFM. He talks to us a little bit about his band, the Able Tasmans, and at length about the practice of talent filtering. Welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Graham Hill.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Now, Thank you for inviting me.
First of all, for the record, tell me, what year did you start at BFM?
It would have been in the mid to late 80s.
You can't be any more specific than that. So
no,
it was after 85 and before 89, somewhere around there.
Yeah, around about that era. A friend of mine I thought would make a really, really good DJ because he had great musical taste and was funny as fuck. And I tried to convince him that BFM would be the place for you. So we went up with this bag of records. We got a thing to do a show. It was a premiere program too. It was like from 2 in the morning till 3. And he was hilarious. And he played great, great music. And his name, he wants to remain anonymous. His name's Tom Maxwell. He lives in Glasgow. And he really didn't want to carry on. And so I did, and he didn't. That's all. Oh, the first time I ever did a show at BFM was the most manus thing ever. It was so bad. Honestly, it was just absolute crap. It was a lunchtime thing where you could broadcast to the quad. We're broadcasting from the Students Association here, and then at lunchtime you'd broadcast to the quad, and the microphone thing went on, and I just went, this is, it was just shite. It was awful. I was terrible, and I just ran away and didn't come back.
Well, if it's any consolation, everyone I've spoken to, their first show was terrible.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. Everyone?
Yeah, everyone.
Really?
I mean, we all had to do that first show, and it's just terrifying.
Damn, I should have said my first show was brilliant. That's kind of how I got involved. I got involved because I loved what BFM did. Like, so many kids come from the provinces. There are so few Aucklanders, you know. Most people actually come from elsewhere and then come here and make Awangaray, where I came from, and make this place what it is. Just when I turned up here, just finding out that there was a station like this that played the music that I loved was like finding friends. It was finding, wow, there are people who like this enough that they've got a station and they're not about to beat me up. It was pretty life-affirming at an important time in your life, you know. I'm 16, really.
So what was the first permanent time slot that you were given?
Breakfast. Well, either that or I can't remember.
And who was the program director then?
Debbie Gibbs. Then it was Jude Unaru and then Robert Southern.
I spoke with Paul Cassidy last week. He was saying that at that time, breakfast host would rotate. There was no such thing as one breakfast host every morning because that would just totally ruin people's social life. So that,
and of course, you know, like a soldier in the trenches, when I was offered to do 2 weeks worth of breakfast, I thought, I'll do that. Sure, you know, I'm fighting the good fight. Of course, I thought it was going to be brilliant. Well, what the hell? It was great fun.
I think
did a couple of weeks of breakfast. People liked it, and then I just carried on and enjoyed that sort of thing. Yeah. Russell Kerr's breakfast were spectacular. They were brilliant. I mean, we all had friends who were hookers and drug dealers and shit like that. Oh, man. And Kerr would be doing breakfast. And, you know, we have a mutual friends in the sex industry, and they'd turn up. And, oh, my God. It would be pretty gamey of a morning. But, you know, that's the way it was. But I just thought, well, why don't we have a regular breakfast thing like other stations do? And that caught on. Mm. Well, somebody bought the idea. I can't remember who it was. Maybe Paul Cass? Yeah, I think it was Paul Cass. Yeah, Paul Cassidy. He said, yes, I think it'd be a good idea if you did breakfast, Graham. It was an opportunity for BFM to go, okay, let's do a breakfast show, because in the radio industry, which a lot of people would, when you start at BFM, it's all just fun. It still is, you know, even when you're in the midst of it, it's still fun. But there's the idea that you can go one better. We can do something else. Let's make ourselves famous, you know? So, okay, let's have a breakfast show. That's pretty much how it went. It was the late 1980s, and there was this bunch of guys. They were wild and crazy and wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I'm a non-believer, but there's a thing that's said in the Bible. It's attributed to Jesus. You know a good tree by its fruit. This man spent most of his latter life in jail for a victimless crime. He came out and he died recently. His name's Steve Marsden. And these badasses who came up from Christchurch, they were called the Androids, and they had the balls to do a tune called Auckland Tonight.
You must have done breakfast for quite a few years.
Yeah, and pretty much burnt me out, because I was with a band at the same time, and there were times when I was doing breakfast and trying to record an album at the same time, and being program director at the same time. Look, to cut a short, long story short, is that I couldn't do all those jobs at once, and got Marcus Lush. Of Lush, Lush and Lush, who was doing talkback to do breakfast. And it was great. It was really, really fun. I made so many bloody mistakes being his program director. He'd have a guy in there doing farts through his asshole. And I remember As so many BFM program directors have done, I think you'll appreciate, you know, please don't point the finger and laugh. I had a worry about this. I thought, this is going to, oh, what the hell are you doing? I felt some great responsibility that we're part of this, you know, industry thing, which all program directors, I think, feel a responsibility. In retrospect, I think I was the only dick. It was hilarious. It was bloody hilarious. This guy could actually whistle out his asshole. And I was furious. I should have just let him do whatever he bloody liked. But that's, you know, that's what program directors do. You get program directoritis and you make awful mistakes in judgment because you feel a responsibility for something. So it's a responsibility you feel for a good reason. You think that what you've got in charge of is fragile. And it is fragile. But better way to go about it is, in retrospect, just be bold and stuff it, you know. You'd be better off just doing the nut stuff and not worrying about it. So, but you feel like you're in charge of a precious thing and you don't want it to be stuffed up by someone making a complaint that can do no. Program directors are paranoid for a lot of bad reasons and for a lot of good reasons as well. Yeah, most of them are great kids. The ones that are bad, you just clip around the ear and out the door. Everyone was a volunteer at that stage, except for the salespeople who made a bit of money, except for Greg Johnson.
Well, Jude was saying she had to fire him.
Yeah, he was the first person ever to be fired from BFM. Oh, that's great. Oh, I'm glad you remember that. Yeah. Well, you know, you try and keep a happy family.
Yeah.
It never works, but you keep trying.
Yeah.
Fire volunteers. That's the problem. You know, if you're paying them something, then you can go, you're out. But if you're not, they go, oh, it's like a double dose of, oh, you're so mean. But, you know, you got to occasionally.
So just out of interest, once you took over as program director and Mark has jumped on doing breakfast, did you continue to do the occasional radio show, you know, if someone didn't turn up?
Or... Oh, yeah, I was doing The Wire.
Oh, there
things
you go.
Like that, yeah. Paul Cassidy started The Wire. And
The Wire.
That's his ex-boyfriend. Isn't it? Cassidy was living with Mark Tierney in a gay relationship for many years. It's terrible that ended so sadly, but I don't know. If it was for civil unions, Paul would be owing Mark Tierney a lot of money, a lot of money, but it ends up that Paul got the house and the pool and kept the dog.
Luckily, there were never any straw children.
No, luckily. You know, with lesbian relationships, at least you can spoon it in. But with the sort of relationship that Paul and Mark had, there's no hole. The Herco Pilots from the early 80s, they were a band that just flashed about, hardly did any gigs, but they represent to me the brashest and most creative edge of Auckland music outside of maybe the Features. And also because hardly anyone's ever heard them, and I think they just rock.
Change.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about your band. Were you in the band before you started at BFM?
I was in the band before I started at BFM.
That's what I thought, yes. Yeah. So
1983, it formed out of the remnants of a band that I was in Whangarei. We were called Sister Ray in Whangarei. It was a three-piece, and we called ourselves Sister Ray because we loved the Velvet Underground, the Stooges, you know, the glory set of influences. For that, we were, well, chased out. And to come to Auckland and find like-minded people, as I mentioned before, was just so wonderful. It took a couple of years to get my mates back from up north to come down here to start a band. And in that interim, I was in a band called Papakura Post Office, which was a noise art band. That was fun. The only band still to this date that I know of that had a strike threat from the university staff. Wonderful people, Brett Mason, Wayne Bell, and Michael Guy. We made no music. It was just do anything that wasn't music. Oh, man, it was fun. And then we'd change our name every week. But I actually wanted to make some good, well, I'm not saying that wasn't good music. It was great. And so friends came down from up north. After that time, I got involved with BFM. And that's where that stupid bloody name change thing happened, because I was a DJ at BFM, and my name, Graham Humphreys, as I was born and given, was after a release of a couple of albums, is there on albums. And of course, I think, as anyone would when you're about 23, we're going to be famous. We're going to be world famous. I better get a different name for the radio. So I got a different name from the radio. The band went nowhere, and the radio broadcasting thing took off. So it was just a sort of a fork in the road. My given name is Graham Humphreys, but the radio thing was Graham Hill. And then when I went to other radio stations, they said, oh, that's Graham Hill. So it just carried on as Graham Hill. Mm.
You actually did become a star, but not how you thought it was going to happen.
No, I became a brown dwarf. Not quite a star.
How helpful was BFM to your band? BFM and the Able Tasmans.
Mm. I think this would be echoed by any band that was around at that time. BFM was the only thing that did anything for anybody that had anything good to say. You had to be shit to be on the other stations. Even good bands had to play shit songs to get on another station. That's how bad it was, really. BFM had some taste and knew the provenance of rock. All the things that are now being borne out and have subsequently been over the last couple of decades, documentaries that show the provenance of great music, that exhibit so beautifully how serious the art is. It's a bloody serious business, artistically, if you're serious about it. And BFM took it seriously and didn't play crap. Oh, and unless, you know, occasionally there might be a rogue DJ, but then like wasps upon the rogue DJ, we would descend and sting them and embarrass them to death.
When you were program director, you couldn't be like every week.
That's well, the name change happened anyway. Right. So, yeah.
Can we have a song?
Do you want a song?
Yeah.
From us? You mean the Able Tasmans?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. I'll give you a live to air from BFM. This isn't available on anywhere. I'm the only one with it. It's called Ladies and Gentlemen, and it was recorded just down the corridor live. And the producer was Rex Visible. Thank you, Rex. Thank you.
So that was the Abel Tasmans there, live on BFM. Now, you guys were with Flying Nun?
Well, we were never with anybody. Never signed a contract. This may come as a worry to Warners, no. who apparently think they own our music. I never signed a single bloody thing. Look, we all thought it would become world famous and everything will just happen naturally. Sure.
Anyway, you released some albums.
Yeah.
Several, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then?
And then we split up.
What year was that?
96. This is about BFM, though.
No, I just wanted about BFM. I just wanted the background.
I want to tell you a story about how when the CD first came out, because I was here.
Good. Well, you tell me that.
Robert Southern was the program director, and there was this new thing called the CD. This may come as a shock to young players out there. Before, everything was just vinyl. Vinyl was or cassettes. And the CD thing came out, and there was a program on one of those shows of a Sunday that showed you new products and things like that. And they had a car. I remember distinctly a car would run over this circular, shiny thing. And they'd put it in a machine that would play it, and it would play perfectly. And we all looked to each other and we thought, this is it. This is fantastic. We're not going to have any more dirt in the grooves, any more
scratch records.
Scratch records. And we can scratch on the record itself.
We can drive our cars on them.
Yeah. You can drive a car on it. You can muck it up. And so our first records, I remember it was an REM record that was the record CD that we first got from the record company. Here's this to the radio station. We'd like you to play this. And it was our first CD. We were on the ball, baby. But I remember distinctly I had the job as a volunteer of scratching on the CD with a scratchy knife, BFM. This is the property of BFM. And you gotta write it in deep, and you gotta write it in hard, and you gotta go scratch, scratch, scratch on the CD. There we go. They're not gonna steal this bastard off us now. And the entire bunch that we got, we tried to. And here's the new one from REM. It's from their album called Murmur. And oh, my God. We were just so dumb. The whole lot. It was an evening's worth of scratching, man. I remember I was a volunteer. Oh, I'm not leaving until these are all identified. In inverted commas, ruined. Well, we really didn't know what we were dealing with. It was a completely new animal. It was like something had landed from a UFO. We got around it in the end. We figured out that you can't muck up, you can't scratch, you can't engrave. That's all, really. Don't believe all the talk you get about new technology. Mm. Any new technology, yeah.
Back to the bee.
Yeah.
When did you finish as program director?
I haven't. Oh, as program director?
Yeah, no.
1995? Yeah, 95. During the recording in 1991-92 of Abel Tasman stuff, it was pretty tough because we were doing overnight sessions because we couldn't afford to do, you know, day sessions and stuff, and doing breakfast as well after that, and then being program director as well. I thought, oh, well, I'll just cope with all of this, and you know. Nah, no. Can't. I went back to being the breakfast host under a different program director, and that was great fun. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. And then for whatever reasons, I don't think I was welcome back. After I said, well, okay, do you want to talk about carrying on and doing this thing? Because I was loving it. But no. So that was that. And so
but you weren't fired. You left.
My contract was not negotiated.
Oh, okay.
I said, let's negotiate the contract. Big deal. I mean, you know, what was I being paid? It was like 20 grand or something for a year. But no worries. No worries at all. No, just moved on. I went to work at TVNZ. With Marcus and Paul, and then
who had both left BFM by then as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. More sensibly than I had, and I still work with Paul to this day. which is great, on eating media lunch and unauthorized history of New Zealand. And I think BFM listeners can, and people who work here can, look with either pride or dismay, whichever you choose, when you watch those things. And we're still, as far as I'm concerned, we're still working for BFM. It's an ethos. We're not on your radio station, but we're still on your, in inverted commas, radio station.
That's right.
It is true. It is so true. It was tough doing breakfast occasionally, though. I came up here one day to do a breakfast show, and 5:30 in the morning, and I'm on at 6 or 6:30, I forget. And the desire to do a poo is just so like primal and overwhelming. Toilet was locked. I was just breaking. Something inside me felt like it broke. It was either that or Mr. Turtlehead is just coming right out, and I'm going to do a big Iggy Pop in the studio. It was really, really painful. I managed to do some sort of duck waddle. This is about a quarter of an hour before I have to make it to air, and I managed to make it to the chemistry mass building and found a dunny, and I just sat down, and a misshapen poo came out. It was, poos should be a certain shape. They should be pointy at one end. They go out to a largeness and then remain pointy at the other. Mine was more like asteroid shaped. There was something wrong as it went through. And of course, I'm already suffering a degree of internal pain, thinking I'd broken myself. And I looked into the poo bowl after I'd done it, thinking I'm going to have to go on air in 1 minute. I'm going to have to run from here to get back onto air in time. And Mikey Havoc, can you please, you know, really, this level of dedication? I looked at the poo bowl after I'd delivered this asteroid, and the poo bowl was full of blood. I thought, well, this is it. I'm going to die. I'm going to die on air. Part of me thought, oh, geez, I don't want to make my mum cry. The other bit was, excellent, I'm going to die on air. Yeah, this is a really great radio. I didn't pass out. Nothing happened. I wasn't bleeding out my ass or anything after that. It was only a day later that I realised that I'd had a big feed of beetroot the day before. Just by coincidence, when I had to pass the asteroid, it came with all this beetroot stuff. And I honestly thought, that's it. I've broken everything. I've just done my guts in. This is how people died in Agincourt. High five to whatever realm one goes to. But no, it was okay. But when you see the toilet bowl full of blood, Marcus Lush of Lush, Lush and Lush, 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 Lush, Lush and Lush. One of the neat things about BFM was bands would come up and do jingles, bands that we had so much respect for and loved playing. It was so neat that they just came up here. Oh, yeah, we'll do a jingle for you. And this is probably the most famous, one of the most famous, by Martin Phillips and his Juggling Chills.
There's only one station worth listening to, 91.8 from us to you. We're your airway allies, we're a stereo friend, Radio
BFM. Here we go, Martin Phillips.
Yeah, lovely having those people come up. And the engineers that were here always saying, yeah, sure, yeah, sure, yeah, sure, to anything, which is great. I really enjoyed working with Russell Kerr here. He tied his cock up in present wrapping. I don't know if it's Christmas or birthday or something, or just general wrapping. And after blindfolding a DJ, threw it on the desk. Open this. Tremendous. Just wonderful. He set the standard in the sort of employment rigor that goes on here at BFM, or has gone on at BFM, and that unless you can stand a good deal of ribbing, then see you later. Right. Maybe that's really unfair, but I think there's some righteousness to the hazing as well, because there was a certain standard of being tough enough. Unless you were tough enough about your own convictions, you're not going to stand up for what BFM believes in, and that is music that's under the cosh anyway. Unless you're going to stand up for that and have some balls to do it, soldier, then you're not going to be much use in the front line. It's not war, but it was... There was something really invigorating about it as well, that people could be that mean to each other. We had a DJ who couldn't say his R's, you know, Wood of the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He had big, thick glasses. He was a wonderful DJ. You might remember him. This is going to sound terrible, but it's absolutely true. We had this roster of community notices that had to be read. So we just wrote one out completely and utterly bogus and knew that it would have to be read on his show. Remuera Radiography Clinic requires radiographer for regular remuneration, something or other. It was radiography and all that sort of stuff. And he read it out just verbatim. It was such a gift. Didn't do him any harm, but it was such a gift to us. The three people, me and Paul and Russell, who were just writhing on the floor laughing at itchy and scratchy at our own stupidity. But that sort of thing, I don't know, you know, why not? If you want to blame somebody or credit somebody, depending on your point of view, yeah, James Schoening. He was the hard ass.
He started the culture of bullying.
Yeah. It's like a try-hard filter. If anyone tries too hard, it's like a bullshit filter. It's bullying for a reason. It's... No, I wouldn't consider it bullying because I think that's awful. I think that's senseless and has no purpose. Our bullying, of course, is all because they're different.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, no. I don't know. It was like a bullshit filter. That's all. That's how I saw it. And I was, in inverted commas, bullied too. Every time that it happened, I thought, actually, yeah, you're right. That was lame. Up your act.
Can I talk briefly now about sport? Not because you do sport on television, in particular because you were a very motivating force in putting sport on BFM.
Was I?
I think you were. FA Cup finals, World Cups.
Oh, yeah. Things.
Live simulcast, you used to watch the thing on TV and do the commentary.
Actually,
on the radio.
Actually, someone else. No, it was someone else. It took a long time for the tide to go out from the Springbok tour. Honestly, it was awful. It was just bloody awful. Rugby especially deserved that kick in the balls. I'm glad it got it. It deserves another as well. It still wanders around like it's the be-all and end-all of our bloody society. It's ridiculous. Play soccer. Get over it. It just wanders around thinking that it's the deserved princess of goodness when it's actually got a lot to answer for. Has the rugby union apologised for sending whites only in 1960 and 1949 to South Africa? No, it hasn't. Please, can we have one? That would be really nice. No Maoris, please. There's no Hories in our scrum. Doodah, doodah. Brilliant. They don't even address it. God damn it. It's as good a canvas as any for stories to reveal themselves. And there's drama and everything there. No, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't really, really matter. But it can matter quite a lot to some people, and it's a lot of drama can happen, and really neat drama too, and characters and people that otherwise wouldn't be seen.
So, I don't think anyone else from BFM has ever gone onto a career in broadcasting sports. I think you're probably alone there.
Although Jeremy would like, no, he shouldn't. I'm the one keeping him down. Often people in the television industry who I'm closely associated with say, well, would Jeremy be interested in doing this? And I say, no, he doesn't know anything about sport. It's just a big show. Someone at Sky asked me the other day, would Jeremy like to be a comments person, sideline at the cricket? And it's just starting at 2020. Maybe would he be good at commentating and things like that? And I said to them plain that he doesn't know anything about cricket. He isn't good enough, hasn't been good enough at it. Has trouble explaining himself without an auto cue. And so that one was just thrown in the bin. When you're program director at BFM, you want to protect it and you feel as though you don't want people to do things that are too nuts. There are some exceptions, I think, when you know the music is just so good and it breaks every rule out there in broadcasting and you say, fuck it. This is so good. If anyone complains about the language used in this, they can go stick it up their ass. Take me to court. Do whatever you like. And this is one instance where I actually grew the balls to say, yeah, we're going to play this. This is great. It's grim, people. It's a dude who's obviously scarred by the loss of a loved one. But it's just simply beautiful poetry set to a bit of music. The rest of his music's rubbish, but this is great. His name's Jackie Levin, and we stuck this on playlist to some objection, I think, 93? Jackie Levin, So My Soul Can Sing.
Lord, she's gone. Done left me, done packed up and split, and I with no way to make her come back. And everywhere the world is bare, bright bone, white crystal sand glistens. Dope, death, dead, dying and jiving drove her away, made her take her laughter and her smiles and her softness and her midnight sighs. Fuck peace and music and clouds drifting in the sky. Fuck the sea and trees and the sky and birds and alligators and all the animals that roam the earth. Fuck smack and crack and dope and booze and red ripe tomatoes. Fuck Hogmanay and fuck 12-step. Fuck Campbellton Loch. Fuck Billy Connolly and Andy Stewart and Auld Reekie and the City of Culture. Fuck Major and Thatcher, fuck Mandela, fuck Bosnia. Fuck East 54445. Fuck the IRA and the UDA. Fuck Joseph, fuck Mary, fuck God, Jesus and the disciples. Fuck devolution, fuck freedom, fuck the whole motherfucking thing. All I want is my woman back, so my soul can sing. 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 So my soul can sing.
Do you want to ask the question again?
Yes, I do. Graham, did you have any difficulties with the Broadcasting Standards Authority while you were here?
No, there were always threats, and it was like clouds on the horizon. It was always the threats that made you shit your pants, not the actuality of it. And the weird thing is, when there were some, they never came to anything. They were always from the weirdest directions, the ones you weren't thinking about. Oh, someone said someone might be dead. And they weren't. And that's a huge deal. And it's someone that no one's heard of, but someone mentioned something and were mistaken. It was really mundane things. And what's the big problem with the Eastern Fiction anyway? And shame on us. And I mean us, all the people that have worked at BFM before, that we haven't done anything bad enough to actually go to jail for, because we really should have.
Well, we've tried.
Yeah, well, we haven't tried hard enough. It's honestly, the thing is, BFM does tiptoe. It does. I think every program director would recognize that. You do tiptoe because you think you're in charge with very little C.
Well, like you said,
of something that's precious and
fragile.
Yeah, it's fragile. But to make it stronger, just don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Knock yourselves out. Yeah, but not enough. Not enough. Not enough. Brilliant, isn't it? After rattling on about how you should learn from stuff. it's like new ideas that make BFM special, and radical ideas, and the fact that BFM is given pretty much a green card to do a hell of a lot of stuff that other radio stations don't. Make use of it or die. Just do nuts stuff. Just knock yourself out and bring back the bullying system.
Yes,
I recommend hazing because otherwise there's no filter and you'll end up with idiots. Look, I don't know. I really don't know. It's not about genres, never has been. It's about taste. It's about what's good in those genres. Mm-hmm. Do you want the third track from the guy Sting from Police who thought he was black and he got the guy from the Amazon with a plate in his lip and then sent him back to Heathrow and said, nice, thank you very much. You know, do you want to play that tune? Or would we have played that tune in the 80s? No, we didn't because we thought it was crap. It's about taste. Who cares? It's about taste and what is good music. There's something underlying, or there should be something underlying within all these genres that goes, yeah, quality. You're thinking about your music. You know the provenance of your music. You know that it is artistically different. It is doing something different. Otherwise, no one would have seen Arnett Coleman. No one would have seen John Coltrane. No one would have seen Lou Reed. Mm. It's the same thing today as it was back then. Dead set the same thing. BFM has to be the arbiter of taste. Graham. Thank you, BFM. We're still working for you, you know. I may not come here every morning like I used to in the past, but we're still working for you. Exactly. We are. We did Dad's Tips. Remember Dad's Tips?
Yes. In fact, Paul included a dad's tip, the one where dad thinks he's died.
Oh, yeah. He would, because that's the big Bravo one
of course he wrote.
And that he put his name to. It's unbelievable. Every word in that. And the station manager at the time spoke in an English accent, and I've got no idea why. I must ask her. Okay, I've got something for you then. There is something else that we used to do. Paul's old lover, Mark, it's a shame about the house. The pool's just green now.
It's a shame about the band. You know, it totally destroyed the band.
The bench, man, it's the pool. Nothing's happened with the house. The pool is green, there are frogs in it. It's unbelievable. This little thing, there's a bit of tagging at the side. I heart Paul. God, that's so sad. It's like Simon and Garfunkel breaking up. Okay, it's getting nuts here. We did conspiracies. This is something that didn't last more than about a month. And Paul's partner, Mark, did the voice of conspiracies. Who still does the voice for The Wire when you hear it in the morning.
The Wire.
We did these stupid conspiracies things, and I think it's pretty much the brainchild of the progenitor of the filter of talent called Russell Kerr. Filter of talent, otherwise known to you as hazing or bullying. Paul may have forgotten this or blanked it out. I'll just play you one.
Conspiracy. Today we're talking to the wetter.
Chain drunk. Oh.
You have an amazing find regarding lotto numbers.
Yes. Did you know that if you multiply the distance between the SIS headquarters and the number of times that President Bush said Saddam Hussein in 1991, divide it by the distance between Earth and the alien's home planet, multiply it by pi, you get the lotto numbers for June 11th. That's terrifying, Paul.
Interesting.
Conspiracy.
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society. This documentary is made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary and is produced at BFM by Dubhead.